Our next speaker is Erez Sarasyan, as an historian specializing in the late Ottoman and modern Armenian history. He's director of the Gamidas Institute in London, and among his publications is a critical edition of the British Parliamentary Blue Book, The Treatment of Armenians in the Ottoman Empire.
First of all, I'd like to start by thanking you, the organizers. It's been a fantastic, yesterday was fantastic, started available today as well. I'm very pleased to be here, glad to be here. My talk is in many ways more pedantic in terms of the type of work that I do. It will be on the Armenian genocide, but focusing on the denial process with a specific case study, which is probably very familiar to most of you. The reason when I talk of the Armenian genocide denial in this context, by denial I mean the engagement of a historical issue where the person concerned is well informed and makes a systematic avoidance of engaging relevant data and scholarship as a means of to make a case that otherwise they would not be able to do. So it's very important. And the example I have is the work of Dick Lowry, who in 1990 produced a book called The Story Behind Ambassador Morgenthau's Story. It was supposed to be a critique of the testimony of Henry Morgenthau, the American ambassador to Ottoman Turkey in 1915. And the reason that I engaged this 25 years ago, the work was done, the reason I'm still engaging is because Lowry's work was written and it was floated out there in the 90s as part of a denialist strategy, shall we say, to cast doubt about a very particular source that was particularly important. And to this day, Lowry's work is cited in a number of major denialist websites, but what you realize is that what Lowry is part of an architecture of denial. There's a whole division of labor, if you will, in terms of what type of work individuals may do and how it can deal together. So if you look at the Turkish Foreign Ministry website, for example, you see reference there, you know, why Morgenthau's testimony is it doesn't carry weight, and we'll deal with that later. The head of the Armenian section of the Türk-Tarih Kurumu, Turkish Historical Society, he cites Lowry as a legitimate source. RRN is this Armenian Studies Center in Ankara that's geared towards denial. They use it and they reproduce this argument that here we have scholarly work by an American scholar casting doubts about, you know, this source that Armenians or non-Armenians keep citing as part of the debate on the Armenian genocide. And so the part of the talk I give is that Lowry is a scholar in many ways, but he's a crooked scholar. He knows his materials very well. I know him personally. He's a good scholar if he were to stick to what his specialization is. But in the 1980s and 1990s, he worked for the ITS, Institute of Turkish Studies, in Washington, D.C. His job was not to promote scholarship. His job was to undermine scholarship for political purposes. And people who lived through that era probably know it better than I do. And so my job is to engage this type of case studies of denial as a way of engaging very precise actors and players within a denialist debate that keep coming up, because there is a need to refute them. There's a need to refute this type of argumentation, especially in Turkey where we're now, because they have a certain credibility to it. If you are not a specialist and you read Heath Lowry's work, it has a ring of authenticity. There are archives, there are the clear categories and citations, so it looks very good. So, and I've done this with other works, like that 1916 Blue Book. Yusuf Saranay's claim that the Armenians who were arrested in Turkey in 1915 in Istanbul actually survived, they weren't murdered, they were sent to prison until 1918, they were released. This was argued by the head of the Turkish archives, you know, using Ottoman records with nice citations. It's completely fabricated. I mean, I said this is worth engaging. It is a way of showing what we mean by denial. And so it's the counter strategy is to use those nuggets in the opposite direction, to actually focus on denial as a concept itself and institution that's supporting its recycling. So I've done a number of this work. So it's possible to challenge this type of scholarship because they are, in a sense, they're based on archival research themselves, and in Turkey there's a need, especially as there's a division between civil society and academia, and it's increasing. It's not a Turkish Armenian issue; it's an academic issue even within Turkey. And some of my great best of the colleagues there, most interesting, are there. So why was Ambassador Morgenthau, targeted by dinars? In the 1980s, as mentioned earlier, the Turkish state adopted a new strategy of denial. It was a forward policy. It was an engaging policy, rather than a silent one. It was after the 1980 coup. The decision was taken in Ankara. Kamuran Gürün talks about this in his memoirs. They decided they will go forward, they will engage this, they will destroy the so-called Armenian position on this issue. And publications like Kamuran Gürün's work, Minkemal Ökeş, Yunus Erel, handbooks that were published at the time in order to disseminate this type of information. Justin McCarthy's book, very nice one, Turks and Armenians. It's just a handbook, but it's very insidious. It's aimed at activists. It's aimed at Turkish Americans. It is seductive if you want to believe. And the idea is to float up paradigms for denial itself. Henry Morgenthau was chosen for this because Morgenthau was being cited over and over again, the American ambassador in Ottoman Turkey, and in the United States it carried a lot of weight. The Turkish state could not ignore the damage that Morgenthau's testimony was doing, and Larry was, I guess, chosen to write a response. So before I say what Larry was about, what exactly was it that Larry didn't want us to consider as part of our evaluation of Henry Morgenthau? Well, Morgenthau was a well-placed observer. He was the American ambassador in the capital, in Istanbul. He was, when the war broke out and the Ottomans entered it, the British, the French, the Americans, they broke up, the British, the French, and the Russians broke up diplomatic relations. The Germans and Austro-Hungarians were allied to them. The Americans were the most powerful neutral country in the world who still had representation in the Ottoman Empire. And Henry Morgenthau in Constantinople was the top of a sort of information pyramid. He had access to the Ottoman provinces through his consulates, in place of Hartwood, Trabzon, Aleppo. And this relationship he had with the provinces meant that he could get information from these areas in the following months, whereas other countries could not do so. And even with censorship, the Americans had a way of getting information out. Secondly, the Americans also had a vast missionary presence in the area, long-standing integration, not just where the consulates were, but also in other areas like Sivas and Kayseri, Erzurum, Van, and so forth. So the Americans had a very wide sweep of the Ottoman Empire in terms of a real presence and a critical juncture in history. And Morgenthau was at the top. They could get information out, and he had, as it were, it wasn't real-time information, but significant information. So that when the persecution of Armenians started in 1915, first in Van and Zeytun, Morgenthau was Morgenthau was in a position to begin to engage this initially what were rumors and then probe those rumors with alternative information that he had. And the way he probed it was first vis-a-vis what information he received, but also with the Ottoman state, with other foreign dignitaries. So he was in a position to question the information that that he was getting in a critical way. And we can talk in this categorical terms because Morgenthau left behind a very incredible archive for our own use. The first is that he kept diaries, which he dictated to his secretary, Hagi Vandonyan, on a daily basis, and then quite a lot of detail, who he met, and some of in shorthand, what was said, and so forth. He also had correspondence with family and others. But third most important, there are the consular records that he was receiving from the provinces, so we know how he was informed by his own consulates. We also know that what he wrote to the State Department in Washington, D.C. So we have a clear idea of what his position was. In Larry's account of Morgenthau's activity, he leaves out completely Morgenthau's diplomatic correspondence, that is, how was Morgenstern informed by the province? And secondly, what were his actual thoughts at the time? Because Larry wants to play on a hypothetical level. Did Morgenstern know or didn't he know? The actual fact is that Herbert Morgenstern was, it's incredible how quickly he was, how incisive he was in coming to terms with the reality of what was going on. Let me try if I can open this now. Alright. So, did you? That's the wrong one. Sorry. Help me out. I'm not a Mac person. So what we have is, we have a clear record where Morgenstern stood, how he was informed, how he probed the army issue, and what conclusion he received. The denial of this record is an integral part of Lowry's strategy. And this is, in a nutshell, what Lowry does not want you to see. Because what you see there, I think you can see the numbers, in column A, is information that Morgenstern received in the province, in Constantinople, from the provinces. And you can see that after April, May, June, July, August, and on the left-hand column, he's getting a radically increase in the type of information that talks to you about the Armenian genocide. That only indicates reports that were filed under race problems in State Department archives. Race problems is how the State Department at the time described what was happening to Armenia. These are the reports from the consulates, from places like Hartford, the Trabzon, and so forth, describing how Armenians were being persecuted, including how Armenians were being massacred. On the second column, B, you see how often in Morgenstern's diaries does the Armenian issue come up in conversation. And you can see already, like in June, he just from the diaries that was recorded, not what I wrote, 16 times, July 25 times, August 25 times. It shows that Morgenstern was actively involved in engaging the Armenian issue. It wasn't something passive that he sort of dabbled in. He was actively engaged in. And C is important, because it again ties with Larry's denial afterwards, because it shows how many people, different people, were present at those conversations. That Morgenstern actually debated the Armenian issue, not just with a few individuals, but he debated with a wide range of issues. In fact, I can count over 100 people that, during this period, Morgenstern either talked about the Armenian issue or they were present in those conversations. So that gives you a sense of the breadth of the information that Morgenstern was getting. Some are Germans, diplomats and advisors, some are Americans, some are commissionaries. It's all very, very different people. But Morgenstern had a real interest, and we can quantify it in such a manner. This information has been completely left out of Lowry's presentation. And finally, we have the reports that Morgenstern sent the State Department, which were yesterday by Gary. How much time do I have? Five minutes. I will skip it. So what does Lowry say in his characterization of Morgenstern? He said, Ambassador Morgenstern's story was written in 1918 when he came back. It was written with a ghostwriter called Bertrand Henry. Well, he wasn't secret, because Bertrand Henry actually wrote the introduction, the first article to the whole series when it was published. The account was published in World's Work. World's Work is a popular magazine with nice pictures, nice narrative. It's a memoir. It takes certain license in terms of how it presents information. Some of the characters are, shall we say, with hindsight, but also take with literary license. They're much more, makes much better, easier, the description of Talat Pasha and so forth. But the description fit into the Morgenstern, the issues and the events fit into Morgenstern's diaries and other reports. And there's almost at least some correlation between the private papers and the reports and the book. But Larry says this was written by Bertrand Henry, the ghostwriter. And Morgenstern worked with two Armenians called Hagop Andonian and Arshak Shemavonian. And he doesn't discuss anybody else who had any kind of input into Morgenstern's understanding. He doesn't discuss where this information came from. And he suggested that Hagop Andonian and Arshak Shemavonian were his eyes and ears. So this is a typology that he floats out there. And what's incredible is that this is something that the deniers pick up. ah, Morgenthau hit Armenian eyes and ears. You know, he was misinformed by Armenians as part of that sort of denialist discourse. And Lowry sort of feeds into that. And he says, so these Armenian eyes and ears, they sat together, they titled this the manuscript. Then Robert Lansing, the American Secretary of State, sort of went over it and changed it. And basically, this was part of World War One propaganda. Now, there may, of course, well, be an angle of that. When Morgenthau suggested the publication of his memoirs, he even told Wilson that he will stick to the truth, but this will serve America's war interests. So this is an issue in which Lowry touches on, this is war interests. This is a propaganda publication that are not really based on anything other than hearsay, and it's half-truth and incomplete complete lies. And Morgenthau vilifies, you know, these characters, that there's no correlation between diaries and private paper and the memoirs, which is actually not true. And he goes so far to say that Morgenthau in 1915 did not believe that the Armenians were subjected to anything like a genocide or mass extermination, which is, a complete no-no, because that's exactly what Morgenthau said in July, a campaign of race extermination underway. So Lowry, by keeping out the correspondence that he was writing State Department when he was saying what he wanted, was claiming something completely different. Then he uses the question of George Schreiner, an American correspondent, who supposedly knew better than Morgenthau. He says Schreiner was there, he saw what happened to Armenians, and he Schreiner criticized Morgenthau. What he doesn't say, Lowry, is that Schreiner was only saw one deportation from the Armenians in May 1915. He was in Istanbul the rest of the time. He had no access to information. Schreiner's attack is a personal gripe against Morgenthau and nothing more. But Lowry uses that to move towards a complete denial. And towards the end of the book, Lowry goes to full denial when he says Morgenthau was not only responsible for writing this fake memoir, but Morgenthau actually fed wartime propaganda to the British and in terms of the Blue Book, but also Leipzig. That Morgenthau, this soil, this questionable source, was actually the architect of wartime propaganda against the Ottoman Turks. He fed them. It is completely, it's an outrageous thing to say, because the State Department reports, they're real reports, that went to State Department. State Department released them, the British picked it up, and they made the genocide thesis. It's quite incredible the convoluted manner in which he twists and turns with his material, and he creates this a new turn of typology, racist typology of the genocide. And I will finish. I was watching Edward Erickson. I find his work quite interesting. He's a military historian. A lot of people say he's also a denier. I won't get into that. I find it useful to read what he says. He gave a talk at the Institute of Turkish Studies, of all places, a few months ago. I watched it on YouTube. And at one point, somebody said, well, what about Morgenthau? And he goes, well, he said, Morgenthau, he said, he was a bigot, he was a racist, he looked down on Turks, he had Armenian advisors, Hagop Andonian and Arsat Shimabonian, they fed him information. And you realize how this kind of denialist work feeds itself through websites, through this kind of network, and why it is important to engage them in a more critical way. And also it's a way of turning the relation between from denial to a typology of denial, where you now, in an accusatory way, in identifying the nature of the problem we have, which we have with certain categories of Turkish historians, and the damage that they do to a real understanding. Lowry's work is a disrupted engagement of an academic issue, and it makes a very good case study of how history should not be written. And if I were teaching, I would actually use this as a typology of research and misrepresentation of data and within the context of the Armenian genocide. Thank you very much.